Hey, everybody. I am here with Dan from Secret Galaxy. How's it going?
I'm doing well today. Thank you very much for having me on.
I've been a fan of your channel for a while, since it was Toy Galaxy, and I always really enjoyed your videos, but what do you think is the best way to describe them? Because I almost call them your documentaries, but you have such a unique style. I don't know if I would call it that, you know? I mean that as a compliment, obviously.
You know, and that's totally appropriate. That's totally fine. I think the easiest way to describe it to somebody who's never seen any of our videos before would be very short form documentaries. That's really what they are. We try to put more focus on entertainment to make them, you know, efficient, quick, fun, you know, sort of mostly kind of surface level sort of thing. You know, people do describe them as deep dives, but I don't know that we really go that deep. You know, we're really trying to talk about these things more as if someone who has never heard of these brands, these properties, these movies, TV shows, whatever. They've never heard them before. Here's sort of the basic information you need to know. And if there's a very interesting story in there somewhere, we want to grab that too.
Yeah, I think you've really nailed the balance with that too, because there are some things that I've watched that I thought I knew a lot about, and you had some cool tips that I didn't, you know, that I didn't know about. But on the flip side, I've seen some of your videos, and I was like, you know, I always wondered about the second Masters of the Universe video. You know, it's the one I just watched last night, and it's like I never saw it. And then it was the perfect amount of info, where it wasn't going into stuff that people who weren't a huge fan would get bored of. It always kept me interested. The facts didn't go too deep, but they were deep enough to make it seem like, oh wow, all right, that's neat.
Yeah, that's the thing. We figured out a while ago that our audience was not the people who were the diehards that were really, really deep into this stuff. You know, we're not going to go deep into the lore. You don't need to know the names of the third and fourth and fifth level characters. We're not going to get into that stuff. We really want to talk about these things as if they're just and sort of shine a light on why they have persisted, why people liked them, why they stuck around, and why they're still notable to talk about in some cases 40 years later.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting too, because obviously nostalgia is the gateway drug for all of this stuff. That's how I found your channel. I was just scrolling through YouTube on my TV, and I think it was the Knight Rider one. It was the first one I ever watched. And I was obsessed with that when I was a little kid. And I was laughing so hard because at one point in the video, you started showing the different toys that were available. And I had this, I forgot what they were called. 80s kids will know what they are, but they're plastic trikes with pedals, and it had like an e-brake thing that you could pull. So the
kids, the big wheels,
big wheels. All right, yeah. Well, they sucked. Unless you had a perfectly smooth driveway or something.
Yeah.
Trying to do that slide thing never happened. And I remember like, oh, I wonder if they're going to show that. And when you know, you went through a lot of the cool toys, some that I didn't even know existed. But then you said something really funny, like, and if I missed the toy that you had when you were a kid, I wasn't trying to insult your childhood. I just burst out laughing. I was like, that's awesome. That was very funny. So.
Yeah, those things had like the thinnest, the layer of plastic for the rear wheels was so thin that you frequently, I remember being a kid and having one, and, you know, neighborhood kids had them and whatever. And you would always see these like gaps in the wheels because they would just wear down so quickly. It was fun in concept, but not always fun in execution.
And there was no repairing on them. Once that the plastic joist broke, that was it. And have you ever tried using it on grass? That plastic wheel just spun and didn't go anywhere.
Absolutely no traction whatsoever.
Yes, with a very bad sticker of Kit's, you know, scanner bar on the front of it.
Yeah, but and
it
good luck on good luck on a downhill when that thing just started going, and you had to just sort of take your feet off the pedals and let it go. Try to careen into someone's yard, a bush or something.
It's so funny. If people like young people raising their kids today saw the things that we had, like just one generation before them, it's like, how are you not all dead?
It's true. There's a lot less safety concerns then as there are now. But I'm positive. You know, I've seen my nephews, my nieces and stuff, you know, playing with homemade toys, you know, things they've found, whatever. There's plenty of ways for kids to be dangerous and stupid today.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you get a kid any toy they want, but then they go walking through the woods and they find a big metal pipe with, you know, rusted edges. Hey, look what we have to play with. So, that was us as kids. So what got you started into this? What was your kind of origin story of the channel and how you ended up finding this formula that really works for you?
Yeah, I've always been into, you know, creating stuff, making stuff. I went to a school for art specifically because I wanted to get into comic books. I wanted to write and draw my own comics. And that was pretty much my goal for decades. You know, I graduated college in 94 and then just went right into working regular jobs, retail and sales and whatever. The day job didn't matter to me. I just needed to pay the bills. It was, you know, at night that I was really working on my craft and honing my skills as an artist. And I did that for years and years and years and years and years. And then producer Greg and I, Secret Galaxy is a two-person team, just myself and producer Greg. We met because we were working at the same place. He's the same way. He'd always wanted to do creative things. He's more of a he's more into film. And he always wanted to write and direct movies and stuff. And so we just started having conversations about those things. And then another decade went by, you know, and we were really good friends and stuff. And we just got to a point one day where he was watching a lot of YouTube. I was watching YouTube. And, you know, at the time, I was a toy dealer. I was buying collections, selling them. I was renting space at local comic shops, that sort of thing. And we were just sitting there one day. And like, I would set up at local shows, you know, get a booth, sell toys and whatever. And he would frequently sit at the booth with me. And one day we were just talking and it was like, why don't we just start a YouTube channel? Let's just try it. Let's see what happens. Let's see what we can do. I'll bring the trivial knowledge. We'll do action figure reviews. And he just wanted to sort of run the channel and make the videos, get better at editing, do all that kind of stuff, creating graphics. He was working as a graphic designer. So we said, let's do that. We'll split everything 50-50. The workload is 50-50. If someday we can make any money off of this thing, it's 50-50. And let's just go from there. And then we just started grinding. You know, we three videos a week for years. We never missed an upload. Every Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, we never missed an upload. And we started to figure out what our voice was. And, you know, for me, it turned out that writing the videos, being on camera, performance, you know, these sorts of things, they fulfilled that creative hunger for me. So the comics kind of went by the side because, you know, this was becoming successful. We could see the numbers. We could see the subscriptions coming in. We could see that this thing was growing. And not for nothing, but, you know, if you're doing any kind of creative endeavor, it helps to have a partner, some kind of a teammate to help keep you on track, to keep you honest, to keep you on schedule. And that's where Greg and I really, really worked together. I didn't want to do the things he was doing. He didn't want to do the things I was doing. So we both had our roles. Everything was very clearly defined and it just worked. And since, you know, I'm sure you can relate to the idea that when you first start a YouTube channel or a podcast or anything, you're just kind of throwing it out there. You don't have an audience yet. You're hoping some people are going to watch and listen. And so really the only person or people that you're trying to entertain are you and whoever you're working with. And that's sort of how Toy Galaxy originally began. I was trying to write scripts that I thought were going to make Greg laugh. And Greg was trying to put stuff in the edit that he thought was going to make me laugh. And that's just where it grew from, you know. And as the numbers come in and you pick up subscribers, it doesn't really mean anything, you know, like if you were shooting in front of a live audience every night and it's like, okay, today there's two people, now there's 10, now there's 100, now there's 1,000, now there's 10,000, that would be different. But as your subscriber count goes up and those views go up, the week to week doesn't change. It's still just Greg and I in my living room, you know? And I think what that did was sort of created this tone of the show, this sort of personality of the show, where it was just like two people having fun, talking about these things, reminiscing, being in, you know, trying to educate a little bit. And I think the viewer felt like they could be a part of that. Like we were just all hanging out, talking about this stuff together. And that really worked for us. And we just kind of leaned into it and tried to stick to that grind. And that's what YouTube is, just a grind. You keep going.
Yeah. You know, it's very rare and very lucky when you have two people click like that. One of the bands I was in, I remember during a practice, I went to the other guitarist and I was like, hey, solo for that song. And he kind of looks at me. He's like, do you want to play it? I was like, no, I want to change the part that I'm playing underneath it to make your solo sound better. And he's like,
what? Yeah.
I love the complicated, crazy stuff. And it clicked. And it's funny because when that stuff happens, people notice even if they don't know that's what they're noticing. And that's exactly what you just said about how he edits to try to make you laugh. There's a lot of funny little gags in your videos and I wondered where they came from. And that's the coolest explanation. What a great answer for that.
I know every week I'm going to be there and he's going to be there. He knows I'm going to be there. He's going to be there. Those are the only two people we can count on. You know, before we started the channel, we were doing a lot of like indie films, you know, short films, contests, you know, entering local film contests and that sort of thing. And what we found was that at that time, you know, with no money, with no budget, with nothing to give people in return, we found that it was very hard to count on people. You know, a lot of bands, it's, if you're coming from that scene, you know, a lot of bands struggle because as you get older, you start to have more obligations, you have more responsibilities, kids, jobs, whatever. And it's like, you can't commit to that practice every time. You can't commit to the shows every time, you know, and that's what starts to pull that band apart. And what we found was that while we were trying to do these film projects, you know, Greg and I were committed 100%, but the rest of our actors, the crews, the locations, we couldn't count on those 100% of the time. And so we had some projects that went right up to, okay, today's our first day of shooting and we're missing three actors. Great. You know, so the channel was sort of born from part of that as well, where it was like, well, we know the two of us are 100% dedicated to this thing. So what can we build with just two people?
Yeah, it is soul crushing when you're in a position like that, when you and another person, or sometimes just you, is putting in a ton of effort and you're just watching it fall apart around you. Like, oh.
And it's incredibly common. Perfect. And like you just said, it's very rare when you can find someone or two or three of people who have the same level of dedication and the same understanding and expectations going into the thing. Yes, we could make money at some point, but it might be a while. You know, and the only thing you get out of this might just be having fun and hanging out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a bunch of people have asked, you know, over the years, I'm starting a YouTube channel. What's, you know, what do you suggest? And the number one suggestion is only do it if it's something that makes you happy. Don't do it with expectations. Cause if you're like, I want to be the next so-and-so, you're not. It's just, that's not how it works. You have to be you and you have to like it. Otherwise it's just, this isn't, if you want to make money, there are 1,000 easier ways to make a lot more money in a lot shorter period of time. I often joke that if you added up all the hours I put into Retro RGB, I could have made more money sweeping floors in a McDonald's.
Anything else. Yeah.
So, but you know, if you like it, you like it.
Yeah. But in this case, you've invested more than just your dollars. You've invested, you know, your heart and your emotion and your spirit and all that stuff. And that comes out on the other side.
Yeah. And you have, you know, when you do work like documentary style stuff, you have things that you could always go back to. And like my weekly stuff, people rely on it for their purchases. I take it very, very seriously, but I can't imagine anybody on the planet would ever be like, I want to go back and watch Bob's episode number 207, where he's like, no, it's, they're useless a week and a half later, but they're, you know, important in the moment. So it's some of the stuff like yours. It's I do try to do longer form stuff when I can, but it's stuff like this is really fun for me too, because anybody could go back to any of the previous interviews and it's just it's all the same chats and the same interesting people.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a certain degree of it that, you know, it depends on what you want to get out of it. And, you know, Greg and I, when we started the channel, there was part of us that was like, well, this should be fun. But there was a bigger part of us that was like, we do want this to be a successful operation. We want this to be a business at some point. We want to be able to do this full time. Because boy, do we both just hate working for other people. We just hate having to, just so many years in retail and sales and management and whatever. It's like, I just don't want to do that anymore. Like I there's too much that I have to say and I want to do, things I want to make, stories I want to tell, that, you know, we need to be in this sort of creative environment. And so when we started the channel, it was one style. Our main content was action figure reviews. And then we started to diversify that into other ways to use that same, you know, material. Versus, is this figure better? Is this figure better? The history of this particular figure. What's the, you know, let's go back in time and do retro reviews, you know, figures that came out 20, 30 years ago, that kind of thing. And what we found was that, you know, we had these 7 or 8 different kinds of shows on our channel. And very clearly, some performed better than others. And, you know, Greg had the foresight and the will to say, you know what, we should focus on the things that perform the best. It seems obvious, but it's hard to do that when you're having fun on the other things. And so he was able to say, let's cut these underperforming things and put more time into the things that perform. So to that end, we have only the audience to thank for, you know, focusing us on what they wanted to watch and what they wanted to see from our channel and letting us build around that and grow the channel bigger.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Now, you mentioned you were a toy distributor and owned a, did you say you owned a shop as well?
I didn't own a shop specifically. I was renting space out of two local comic shops. So what I was basically doing was, you know, people do it all the time. Sell on eBay, sell on Craigslist, you know, any sort of outlet you can find to sell things locally or internationally or whatever, you know, you take advantage of those things. So I had a pretty big, you know, I was a power seller on eBay. I had all my, you know, top tier discounts and all that stuff. I had my whole shipping and logistics operation, but that was still just me. It was one person. You know, my wife had her job. I was doing, you know, toy sales. And so I would, you know, I'd be on Craigslist, you know, every single day, buying up collections, setting up appointments, going to see places. I would go to auctions. I would go to flea markets. I would go to yard sales. I would be on Facebook every day talking to friends and family, like, do you know somebody? Do you have a thing? Have you seen this? Do you want this? You know, looking for places to source, you know, product. And it's real hard, and it's a 24-hour job, and you don't make that much. So, you know, I rented the space out of the local shops. I set up as many conventions and stuff as I could. But you're just always chasing product because you can't just call up a distributor. You can't just call up and say, hey, send me 3 pallets of product. No, you got to go find it. And it's, you know, there's crests and troughs. You know, sometimes you buy 10 collections in a week, and other times it's like 3 weeks before you can get any new product in, and you're sweating. So that actually, it was great because I did that for several years, and that sort of, you know, I already had this lifetime of just knowledge about toys and comics and cartoons and all that stuff. But having dealt with those things on a daily basis, this accessory goes with this guy goes with this vehicle, this thing's priced about here, made it a super simple and obvious transition to go into figure reviews where I already had all that knowledge and information.
Mm. Yeah, that's pretty neat. And plus, doing the eBay thing, now you've gotten used to working for yourself and knowing what it's like to,
exactly.
You know, if you have a couple of sick days in a row, you might not be able to make rent at the end of the month.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. So, yes.
Transitioning to the YouTube working for yourself, you know, that wasn't a large jump then.
Yeah.
From a
yeah.
mental point of view from that.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, thankfully, we're at a place now where we have grown to the point, and Greg is a very good manager with that, you know, as far as that's concerned, with being able to schedule our videos and our time to where we can actually take, you know, some days off. We can schedule some time off now here and there. And, you know, you know what dealing with the YouTube algorithms and stuff is like. You know, yes, your numbers are going to take a hit, but we've been able to set up other stream, you know, revenue streams at this point where, you know, we do have sponsorships, we do have our Patreon, we do have some merchandise sales that allow us to sort of, you know, maintain like a minimum income, even if YouTube is doing this, you know, it's just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, very important to make sure YouTube is not your only source of income.
And it's possible. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
I've seen some people crash and burn who did not deserve it at all. It was just hit by the algorithm hammer, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, we got in just after, as I understand it, the golden age of, you know, monetization on YouTube was right before we started. We started in 2015, and that was around the time that YouTube opened up monetization to basically anyone who wanted to monetize. You just had to meet these certain minimum metrics. You know, it was like 100 subscribers, 1,000 views, something like that. Prior to that, there was a whole vetting process where you had to like apply and get, you know, vetted by YouTube and approved and whatever. And so you could make more money then. You know, once they opened it up to everybody who wanted it, the cut of the pie went way, 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 way down for everybody. So that further emphasize the fact that when we got into it, especially and anybody starting today, yes, you can eventually make it into a business, but to start off, it's really got to come from a place of love and fun and entertainment and just doing it because you want to.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Now, when the toy thing stands out so much, because I mean this with respect, I'm not the biggest fan of toys.
Sure.
But when you add that knowledge into these documentaries, I'm glued to the TV. It's so weird because if you were like, I want to do a review on a Knight Rider figure or something like that, I'd probably be like, oh, I'd like to see that. I'm not sure if I'd get around to it. But, you know, in all your videos, when you're talking about this, when that part comes, it's suddenly so much more relevant.
Right.
Because now you have it in the context of all of that, especially in any of the cartoons that it was, you know, you could tell they were heavily thinking about toy sales when they were writing these cartoons. And obviously Masters of the Universe is the greatest example of that, but you know, all of them did it. So it adds, in my opinion, you know, but it adds so much to these videos of just what a cool perspective on another side of things.
Well, and that's the thing is like, if you really just want to go like, well, why did this toy line get made? Where did this toy line come from? You just go like, they wanted to sell toys. They got some guys to come up with a cool idea and they made the toys and then they sold them. Like, that's a boring story to tell over and over and over and over and over again. And that helped us sort of guide, you know, and transition into these sort of history of documentaries, because there's a more interesting story out there, whether it's the political, you know, environment that these things were happening in. You know, Knight Rider is not really a kid's show. You know, it was an adult show. It was primetime entertainment, you know, at 8 o'clock at night or whatever, not 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, with, you know, kids advertisements and stuff around it. So it is more interesting when A-Team and Knight Rider and those kinds of shows have toys. You know, it's being done for a different reason than necessarily Masters of the Universe or G.I. Joe or Transformers or any of those kinds of things. And even that, you know, even those shows have more interesting stories behind their creation and why they end up selling toys.
Yeah. Yeah, it is funny to think about that. You know, how many Knight Rider episodes did Michael Knight hook up with some chick? And how many Airwolf episodes did they blow something up with a bunch of people in it? Even if they were bad guys, still, you know. But the kids loved them, so there you go. Sell a helicopter that doesn't fly. That was another one of the most disappointing toys of the 80s. Wasn't it the Airwolf helicopter where it was a wired remote control and the blade spun, but it didn't actually fly. It just
went supported forward by the wire. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guarantee every kid under 7 that got that thought it flew.
For sure. I remember having a dream. I literally had a dream about the Inspector Gadget figure had the, you know, helicopter blades that you could attach to his hat and it would spin around. And I remember having a dream, like, I need to get that figure because it'll fly and I'll be able to hold on to it and fly with it. Like,
yeah,
it seemed to make sense to me when I was, you know, 8 years old.
It's funny, you know, it's the return policies were so much more lax back then, but I think the info out there is probably a lot more plentiful now. So I wonder how that applies to toys today for kids. Obviously there's always going to be scumbag companies trying to trick kids into buying stuff, but I wonder how many things are now regulated so you can't imply that it flies when it absolutely does not fly.
You know, like, it's tough because regulations exist. They actually do still exist for stuff like that on TV, cable, you know, and on prominent advertisers for, like, you know, larger websites, prominent businesses. But I mean, you can throw anything up you want on TikTok or Instagram or Facebook or whatever. So I feel bad for anybody who has young kids right now and is trying to navigate this landscape of just absolute unregulated nonsense. Because even as adults, you know, you get tricked and scammed and, oh, I thought this was, you know, the picture made it look like this was, you know, a really nice thing. And when it showed up, it's terrible. It's trash, you know?
Yeah, I have unfortunately gotten a reputation of becoming kind of hard on reviewers that don't actually review anything, because I'm often the one that gets the email. I can't tell you how many times since I launched Retro RGB, I've gotten the, hey, I'm a single parent. I just want to play my old video games with my kids. Some YouTuber with over 100,000 followers said that this was the thing to buy, but it's so bad we can't even play the game. And it's like, I hate to tell you, you got scammed. That person either got paid to do that, or they got paid in a bunch of free units and a big box of cookies or something. And,
And
that's it. And it's just, and of course, you know how life works, right? If me with a small amount of followers says, hey, here's my technical information that this is a bad product. If that person gets caught out, who's got 100,000 followers, now it's, he's a drama channel. Yeah, he's making up lies to get attention. Right. It's like, who are you going to believe? The people, you know, the 100 people calling me a liar or the 10 people going, nah, man, all you need is a camera and an oscilloscope and you could prove every single thing that Bob just said. So
you got to focus on what you're doing and what your goals are. We've always been very careful not to get involved in any drama with anybody else. You guys want to go argue about things, you guys want to go make claims or whatever, just you go do that. We're too busy over here doing our stuff to get involved in any nonsense.
I think once you pass a certain subscriber count, that's absolutely the way to go. But when I was up and coming, if I had kept my mouth shut, I would have immediately been buried and nobody would have listened to me anymore. I had all of the proof backed by science, like, you know, as much as I loathe real drama, I like fake drama. Like when my friends and I make fun of each other, that just makes my heart smile so much. I don't know why. Sometimes people just don't know that we're kidding, and that sometimes makes me laugh harder. I guess maybe I'm not the greatest person, but that's,
you know what, that pops up. That pops up. What I find, I don't know if this applies to you, but there, especially in the sort of toy and action figure community, because I still have a lot of friends that, you know, and I'm still there as a collector, you know, we just don't make videos about that stuff specifically anymore, for the most part. But I still have people who, you know, friends who make those videos, and there seems to be a common thread of people being into wrestling. You know, professional wrestling, and everybody wants to do the fake beef, you know, fake, you know, I'm mad at you, you're mad at me, you know, all that stuff, the kayfabe kind of stuff. Again, we stay away from all that, but it seems to be something that pops up in every genre, whether it's product reviews or, you know, vlog channels or movie reviews. There always seems to be somebody who's like, let's just do it. Let's just have fun, you know, fake beef.
Yeah, I don't think any of my friends have ever set out to do that. I don't think we've ever had a conversation about fake beef, but sometimes we'll just start teasing each other. And my favorite person in the world to make fun of is me. So I just start laughing, and then we start going back and forth. And next thing you know, we realize, wait a minute, did we just do an hour long podcast?
Where yeah, right.
Make fun of each other the whole time. So yeah, that's my kind of drama. I wish I could never do a negative review of anything, but then I'd be useless to the people that rely on me, because I'm supposed to tell you what to buy and what not to buy as well. So
yeah, that's part of what got us out of doing reviews too, is because it's self-financed, you know, I was paying for all the stuff that I was reviewing. I wasn't buying things that I didn't like, you know? So you start to develop a reputation where it's like, oh, well, you know, why do I need to watch Dan's reviews? Because I already know he's going to like it. He bought it, you know, That's why he likes it. But we always came out of the gate from day one with wanting to be entertaining first. The thing I was reviewing didn't really matter. We weren't trying to be informative. It sounds like your reviews are designed to actually provide consumer information so people can decide whether or not this is a valuable, a good purchase for them. For us, it was always about what jokes can we get out of this? How can we entertain? Because our product, first and foremost, was entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's kind of, I mean, it definitely shows through. And, you know, when you're making these videos, how do you choose which ones to start up next? I mean, obviously, when you first start a channel like that, you're picking all your favorite TV shows, you know, your favorite comic book series, whatever else. But now, are you at this point where do you say, like, well, we could have a lot of fun joking around about this one. This one's got a great toy line. I love this series. Like, how do you choose now when you really have to kind of put some thought into it, I guess?
Well, yeah, and the additional layer that we have self-imposed is once you start taking on sponsorships, now you have specific, you know, metrics that you have to meet, because a sponsor is paying for a certain number of views and a conversion rate and all those things. You know, if you're not delivering clicks and they're not getting sales, they're not going to come back as a sponsor. So we have our list, you know, the list of hundreds of different things that we have covered, things that we still have yet to cover, things we're never going to cover because, you know, people have suggested them. And it's like, well, we're not going to get any views on that. You know, like we are a larger channel now, and we do have to meet certain levels. We can't just throw something out there as a joke and just be like, we did the history of, you know, kids, you know, like we're going to do the history of this chair, you know, like we could make a funny video about that, but nobody would watch it. We'd get like 10,000 views, which for us would be a terrible bomb, and we wouldn't be able to put a sponsor on it. And that starts to affect our income. And now we can't make the channel, you know? So right now it's a balance of what do we want to do? Because at this point, I'm so tired of talking about Robotech. I'm tired of talking about Masters of the Universe. I'm tired of talking about Transformers. It's like I've written thousands upon thousands of words about these things, and I'm all out of opinions to express unless something new, you know, happens to come up. So it's like it's this balancing act of what do we want to cover? What do we still need to cover? What do we think is out there that we can still cover? And what is actually going to deliver views for, you know, sponsorships? And sometimes you take a risk. We, you know, in trying to expand our audience out beyond, and that was the name change. We went from Toy Galaxy to Secret Galaxy about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And that was to fully say to the audience, like, we're not just a toy channel. And we haven't been for a long time. We've been pop culture general for a long time. And we started taking a chance with things like, you know, Calvin and Hobbes. You know, that's not a toy thing. There are literally no licensed toys that have ever been made for Calvin and Hobbes. But that was a risk for us because it was tangential to what we would normally be talking about. You know, we did a video about, you know, Nancy Drew, did a video about, you know, even something like Max Headroom. It's like, well, it's still sci-fi, but, you know, there's no toys and it's an adult drama kind of thing, even though it became a pop culture icon and all the advertising. It's trying to step outside and grow that audience. That is a risk, and we don't always know how things are going to perform. So it's a little scary sometimes to throw it out there and say, like, well, let's see what happens. Hope we can hit on all three of those. Whether I like it or not at the end of the day, whether I'm actually interested in that thing at the end of the day is the one that matters the least. It's like, I got to find a way to get interested in it, to find some jokes, to be entertaining, to find an interesting narrative to tell to the audience. That's my job. And then to deliver it in a way on camera that people are going to connect to. So it's definitely a challenge.
Was there one video that stands out where you're like, I don't want to make this. I don't want to deal with it. I just, you know, I have to.
It happens a lot. You know, to be perfectly honest, we just did a video on Pee Wee Herman, and it's not that I don't like Pee Wee Herman. I watched Pee Wee's Playhouse, you know, a ton. It was like the last thing I think that was on Saturdays before, you know, the channels all flipped over to news and boring adult programming. But I felt like we were coming into that video at a point where, you know, he had just passed away, and I felt like everybody had already covered it. And it's like, it still made sense for us to cover it. It was still a good time, but I was like, oh man, I just don't know if I really have anything to say. Like, I don't know if I have anything to say about this that A, hasn't already been said, and B, is going to be at all interesting. So it was a bit of a challenge to try to find a story to tell there, to engage me, to make me want to, you know, write that video. But we eventually found it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it always makes you think when you're in those moments, like, if I'm stuck doing something I don't really want to do, why don't I just go get a higher paying job, getting paid to do something I don't want to do? And, you know, I could get sick days and insurance.
Yeah.
And
all that stuff. There's that fear that if I really am not interested in something, that's going to come through in the video. And if I'm not interested, then people are going to pick up on that and they're not going to be interested. And, you know, if that's somebody's first exposure to our channel, that they're not going to come back. Why don't I watch this guy? He doesn't even look like he's interested in this topic, you know?
That's a very good point, because I was just about to say, I actually think your followers, if you did a video where you were just honest, like, everybody wants me to cover this and I don't really feel like it, so, and you just made a whole joke about it, I think your current subscribers would find that funny. But you're right, a first-off subscriber might be like, I don't want to watch a negative channel, even though your channel is definitely not at all negative.
Well, we just this past week, today's Friday, just yesterday, our History of Monster Squad, the movie Monster Squad.
I haven't watched that one yet. Loved that movie when I was a kid, though.
And it's been covered. It's been covered a lot, you know, especially in the last, like, you know, 3 weeks by YouTube. There's been a lot of Monster Squad videos going out there. But there's also an official documentary called Wolfman's Got Nards. And it's by, you know, Andre Gower, who played Sean. He played the main character in the movie. You know, in 2018, he made a documentary. You're not going to make a more comprehensive documentary about that subject than the guy who was in it made. He's got the director, he's got the writer, he's got the, you know, all that cast, he's got original props, you know, he still has the t-shirt he wore as a 10-year-old, you know, in the movie. You're not going to make a more comprehensive documentary than that guy. So it's like, what can I say about this that guy didn't already just say, you know? And so halfway through it, you know, when Greg and I were doing the sort of, when we were reading through the script and whatever, you know, he proposed the joke, like, you know what we should do when you get to the part where you say, hey, there's this documentary that came out in 2018, we should just end the video right there. And say, what are you doing watching our channel? Go watch his documentary. He already did it. And then roll the credits, you know? And I've actually seen a couple videos that did that exact thing. And I was like, okay, first off, it's not an original joke. People have done that. People have actually done that and ended their video at that point. But secondly, it was like, yeah, what if this is somebody's first video coming to our channel? It's like, I don't want people to think like, this is how we do it, you know?
Mm. So, you just mentioned you saw a couple other videos like that. How do you do the research for yours? Do you watch some other videos that are on YouTube plus use all your contacts and your knowledge? Is that like a...
No, we really, really avoid. I might check some stuff out after the fact, especially if it's someone I know, you know, people, friends of mine, other YouTubers that I'm familiar with. But it is very difficult to write a video in your own voice when you've got other voices out there who've already covered it. I want to make sure that if I do come up with an idea for a narrative, for a gag or whatever, that is unique. And if somebody else has already done it, there's nothing you can do about that. Lots of people are going to come up with the same ideas independent of one another without having any knowledge. You know, in terms of research, Greg usually kicks off the research. Usually he sets the schedule for what topics we're going to pick. Sometimes we'll have a conversation about it. And then he'll do the first pass on research. You know, he'll start from the most basic sources. Wikipedia is right there. It's okay to use Wikipedia.
Yeah.
It's just okay. You can't only use Wikipedia. And you have to verify that information. You know, there's a lot of stuff on Wikipedia that's just straight up wrong. Mm-hmm. And we have had to correct the record in several cases on things where, you know, you're trying to prove that a thing happened in this order, it happened on this date, it happened for this reason, and it's just not true. And so we will go back to original sources as much as possible, especially contemporaneous sources. So if something happened in 85, we want to pull up newspaper articles from 1985. And there are lots of resources. I think newspapers.com is the biggest resource, where it's just like hundreds of thousands of pages. It's like, you know, an online microfiche, if you're familiar with that technology, where you can just bring up all these newspapers and, you know, keyword search. And that is the best thing for us, because it is things that were said at the time. So you know that those opinions reflect the sort of pop culture of the day. And it's not retroactively applying a 2023 sensibility about that thing and the things that have happened in the last 40 years since then. You can get actual accurate quotes. And you can see if whoever filled out the Wikipedia accurately interpreted that information, because a lot of times that's not how I would have interpreted it, but they had their way. I'm going to have my own way. And so I'm going to go with that, my interpretation of the original data. We try to pull up as many interviews as we can find with the people who were actually involved, writers, directors, actors, critics, you know, whatever, from the time if possible. But obviously, if it's an interview that's from like 2 years ago with, you know, the guy who wrote the thing or whatever, then we'll go with that. I want direct quotes from people who were in it and who played a role in it as much as possible, so that I can formulate my own ideas. And then once our videos are done, yeah, sometimes I'll go see like, oh, let's see how other people covered this. You know, what did they do with it? What narratives did they latch onto and find? That sort of thing. And then sometimes, and this was actually the case with that Monster Squad joke that I was just talking about, we were trying to figure out the pronunciation of someone's name. Mm. And the video that we picked just happened to be one that was published recently, and they did the same gag, and it's like, oh, okay, I'm glad we're not doing that gag.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't really think about any of that until you mentioned it, because I almost never watch anybody else's video, but I do have friends that do very similar things. And, you know, friends, like I could text and ask a question, friends. So like, oh, yeah. Sometimes I'll watch their videos I guess if we came to the same conclusions, I wouldn't have a problem with it. We're also doing a lot of technical stuff though. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I'm stealing somebody's joke. If, you know, if 1 + 1 = 2, then we're both going to say it's 2. So yeah, I generally wouldn't do the same thing either. And sometimes that just annoys me too, from a technical perspective, when people get stuff really wrong, it's like, why did I even watch this video? It's just going to upset me.
Yeah. And that goes back to our figure review days. And again, you know, I'm still friends with a lot of the people that still do figure reviews, and it's just, you just want to formulate your own opinion. You want to be able to come at it. And even if we come up with the exact same opinion about a thing, at least we did it independent of one another. And you were able to write your own thoughts and put your own original thoughts down without A, worrying that you're copying somebody else, and B, just regurgitating their words.
Yeah. You know, I imagine doing it that way could also potentially lead to many other videos, because if you find a interview with Glenn Larson who's talking about the 50 other TV shows that he made, and next thing you know, there's a really cool, you know, audio snippet of him talking about something that you didn't know, it's like, oh, you know, maybe we should do one of these other shows that he did too, because, you know, he's talked about some cool stuff here. So
absolutely, absolutely. No, yeah, we've definitely found things that way, for sure.
Yeah. Do you have a couple of favorites? Like, I guess if somebody has not seen your channel before, do you have a couple of them that you would be like, yeah, these are the quintessential Secret Galaxy, you should watch these, it's our, you know, it's how we do it?
I think we've got like 800. We're close to 800 videos. We've been doing like 52 videos, you know, a year for the last 2-3 years. And before that, we were doing like 100 videos a year. Like, there's so many videos. It's really, really hard. And usually what happens is the ones that we enjoy making the most don't actually perform that well, because they tend to be things that we just were able to put a lot of fun into, even though the subject wasn't necessarily the most popular subject. We did one recently. We did the history of Nerf. And there was a lot that got cut out of that video that I was like really upset about. And there's nothing he could do about it. Like, Greg edits what he edits, and I always trust him. I trust him implicitly. I would never question his edits. But there were some things that got left out that I was like, ow. But the final video is still, I think, both informative and really funny. And by our standards, it didn't perform as well as, you know, some of the more popular videos and stuff right out of the gate. So it's hard to say, like, oh, these are the 10 videos you should watch to get a sense of our channel. My first instinct would be just like, go to our channel page, sort by popular, and watch those top 10 videos, because those are the ones that have performed the best. You know,
funny, I actually do the opposite. When I talk about your channel, I tell people to go and skim through and find something that like really hits you. Like, you know, your favorite TV show happens to be a video you did, your favorite toy, whatever else. And just start with something that, you know, that you would really want to see.
Sure,
and then kind of go off to the, you know, that'd be kind of interesting type of videos. But I've never once actually said, go watch the most popular. I've always just said, go hit whatever you think's best for you. So that's
funny. I mean, it's real hard. Like I said, there's just so many videos at this point. Like, people will message me and be like, oh, I binged your whole channel. And I'll be like, how did you binge the whole channel? Like, it took us 8 years to make all those videos. How did you binge the entire channel? That's impossible.
Yeah. A couple of people,
I don't want to watch me that much, you know?
Yeah. A couple of people mentioned going back to seeing some of the first podcasts I've done. And I'm like, the only reason I even leave them up there is to show people how terrible everybody is when they start. That's exactly it.
Yeah. We've cleaned up a lot of our backlog, but our first videos are still there.
Yeah. Would you be comfortable talking about your name change at all? Because believe it or not, a lot of creators of all subscriber counts listen to this. And I think they would be very interested in what you went through. Because I can't tell you how many times somebody's come to me and been like, you know, I hate the name of my channel. It's not even about this anymore, which obviously that's exactly what you ran into. So could you talk about what that process is like and how freaking scary it must have been for all that, you know?
Yeah, no, it was terrifying for me. Greg didn't have a problem with it at all. You know, from day one, it's funny because from day one, neither of us really liked the name Toy Galaxy. We didn't really like it. We could not come up with a name that both of us liked and that we thought really worked for what we wanted to do. What we wanted to call the channel was Plastic Galaxy. But a documentary about Star Wars figures had just been released, and it was called Plastic Galaxy. We're like, well, we can't use that.
That sucks.
And it didn't really speak to exactly what we wanted to talk about. So we went with Toy Galaxy, and it was always a part of us, the show, that we were like, we don't love it. So that was always there from day one. As it became a more prominent thing, I have to admit that it became part of my identity, Toy Galaxy. It was like Dan from Toy Galaxy, Dan from Toy Galaxy Dan. You know, my Instagram is Toy Galaxy. My Twitter is Toy Galaxy. Everything is Toy Galaxy. And that's how people know me. But for Greg, it was always more of a calculated kind of thing. It was more of a business type thing. And he was always asking himself, does this represent to the growing audience and to the audience that we actually want to reach? Does this actually represent what we are and who we are? And over the years, it increasingly, the answer to that question became no, it doesn't represent us anymore. Once we went full, so when I talked about the numbers previously, Greg was very good at looking at the channel and saying, okay, you know, this kind of episode versus two figures being, you know, compared against each other, those are our worst performers. We're not doing those anymore. Just cut them out. We're not making those videos anymore. And then one by one, we sort of just cut those videos out to the point where all we had left was the history videos. And at that point, we had already talked about all the toys, you know, everything that could possibly be covered as a toy thing, we'd done. And so it's like, well, where do we go from here? How can we grow our audience out beyond what we are right now? I don't know if you remember at the time there was this, the COPPA, C-O-P-P-A thing that went down on YouTube.
Yes.
It was like the Children's Protection, whatever. Mm-hmm. And YouTube rolled out all these new regulations and stuff. And people were like panicking throughout our genre, through the toy vertical, because they were afraid their channels were going to get buried. They were afraid their videos were all going to get banned and blocked because now they suddenly had to be kid friendly. And so everybody's putting up, we didn't do any of this. Everybody's putting up these disclaimers, and some of them still have them, where it's like, this channel isn't for kids. Like right at the beginning of the video, this isn't for kids. This channel is meant for adult collectors. And it's like, none of that matters. Ultimately, all that happened was there's a toggle in the back end for YouTube, and you click, is this video designed for kids or not? Mm-hmm. It is either explicitly for kids or it's for everybody. That's all you had to do. Just click that box. So that was one thing that sort of set us off and said, we need to change our branding. We need to change our identity, because toy on YouTube as an algorithmic thing says kids. Toy means kids. And then if you are an adult and you're thinking adult toys, it's like, well, we don't want to be associated with adult toys either. in that kind of a market. So it just, toy as a word ended up, it just has this stigma. And we just needed to get it out of our name one way or another. So we kicked it around, trying to think of other names. You know, we were thinking of just completely different names, not even holding on to Galaxy. And I was having a real, real hard time with it. I was like, so much of our success has felt like accidental. It's like magic. Like, I don't even know how it happened. How did we get 1,000 subscribers? How did we get 10,000? How do we get 100,000? I don't want to do anything that jeopardizes that. If we change that name and suddenly YouTube can't find us, the thing that ultimately convinced me was Greg watches so much YouTube. It's his thing. It's his main source of entertainment other than watching football during football season and then horror movies pretty much year round. He's like, Dan, you know, I watch YouTube channels that are of, you know, 20,000 subscribers, 100,000 subscribers, 1 million subscribers. I watch them all the time. And I have seen channel after channel after channel just change their name and nothing happened. All you do is just change the name. And I was like, okay, he had made all the right decisions up to this point that ultimately it just came down to me just trusting him. And so one day he was like, all right, I'm just changing the name. And he just changed it. And it was fine. It was fine. You know, like there's still some sort of residual stuff from that, you know, like we have coupon codes from sponsors. It's still like, use our code Toy Galaxy. Our Patreon is still patreon.com/Toy Galaxy. You know, my Instagram is still @Toy Galaxy. So there's that part of it that I am still associated with toys and Toy Galaxy and collectibles and stuff. I just hosted PulseCon, you know, for Hasbro on the strength of my, you know, space in the community on Instagram and as a collector and those sorts of things. But to the general audience, the people who are not in the toy community, they don't know that thing anymore. It's just Secret Galaxy. And that's just who we are now. And it's been fine.
From a technical aspect, was it, you know, literally just going into YouTube and changing the name, and then what happened to the old name? Because that's a big thing. Like, you could do that. Well, you used to be able to do that on Twitter. Who knows what that dumpster fire is happening now? But
right,
you used to be able to do something like, if I was Bob123, I could change it to Bob321 and then immediately open another account with Bob123 and hold on to it so no one tries to impersonate
you. Yeah. So that was my main concern on Instagram, was I'm still Toy Galaxy because I did not want to lose the name Toy Galaxy because we had invested so much in it. And I didn't want somebody else to just immediately start a channel that was called Toy Galaxy and start producing just, you know, hate-filled, toxic garbage. And now you're hurting our brand. You know, that was my main concern. We had just spent, you know, 6-7 years building up all this equity in the brand. I didn't want to just give it away. But the reality is if you go and search for Toy Galaxy right now, it points at us. You still get us because we're so deeply ingrained in the algorithm that it still associates with us. Now, I'm sure you know, too, that YouTube, I don't know, like 6-8 months ago, something like that, they rolled out handles, YouTube handles. So I wanted to make sure we had that. So if we have a second channel that used to be called Toy Galaxy 2, T-O-O. But once we changed the name from Toy Galaxy 2 didn't make sense anymore. So once we changed to Secret Galaxy, the second channel just became Dan Larson. So Toy Galaxy, Secret Galaxy, Dan Larson, they all point at our channels just algorithmically because we have such a large audience and we've been around for so long. So if you're a brand new channel, I would say just change your name. Nobody cares anyway.
Well, I mean, that's definitely fair.
It doesn't matter. You don't have an audience yet. If you're a sort of middle range channel, yeah, it can be scary. It can be intimidating, but if it's the right thing to do from a growth standpoint, you just got to do it.
So I just went to youtube.com/Toy Galaxy and it just says it's a 404 error. It's like this page is not available.
Oh, yeah. No, we never had actual Toy Galaxy. We had Toy Galaxy TV.
Oh, okay. Secret Galaxy obviously goes right to you. So let me see what happens when I do that. It goes directly to Secret Galaxy. So it does forward all the way to your new channel.
Yep.
Interesting. So is that something you had to set up or did it just do it?
I think Toy Galaxy TV, cause you get us to a certain point at YouTube where you get to pick your, it used to be you picked your URL.
That's how old my channel is. I get to just pick it when I started out.
So. Yeah. You pick your URL. So we had Toy Galaxy TV cause Toy Galaxy is actually, a literal toy store in like the UK. I think they were originally out of. So it used to be if you Googled Toy Galaxy, they came up first, we came up second. I think we come up first now. But I think they had actual Toy Galaxy for a while. Somebody else had it. We weren't the first people to come up with the name Toy Galaxy. It's two generic words just put next to each other. So a lot of our stuff became Toy Galaxy TV. And we had the URL, the actual URL for a while, www.toygalaxy.tv, I think, is what we were for a while. And then just like everybody else, we didn't need a website, so it just went away. But yeah, for the most part, you search for Toy Galaxy. Like if I search on YouTube right now for Toy Galaxy, the number one result is Secret Galaxy and then all our recent videos, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, right after you changed your name, I think I was looking up one of the videos and I did the same thing. And I'm like, it says Secret Galaxy. Is this like the Mandela effect? Was it always Secret Galaxy?
But we didn't make a big to-do about it. Like even I would say like 6 months before we actually officially rolled it out, Greg started taking the Toy Galaxy branding off of our videos. You know, it used to pop up like Toy Galaxy right at the beginning, you know, the little bouncing ball thing, whatever. He just started quietly sort of taking those things down, you know, and just not putting any specific branding on it at that point, except for that skull and helmet logo.
Well, I wonder now, I know a few of my friends with decent sized channels, 100,000 subs, a couple of them, two of them specifically, were really considering changing their name. I wonder after hearing your story and how it didn't matter. I wonder if they're just going to go do it now and see what happens.
It really didn't. I mean, ultimately, I can't say that it had no effect, you know, algorithmically, because who knows? You know, every day you're losing subs, you're gaining subs, you're getting views, you're losing views. That stuff is going down. So I can only say that, you know, the sort of trend has always been up. And I could go back to the day that we actually made the switch and you wouldn't see like a pit or anything in our stats because people suddenly couldn't find us. It's more about how people watch YouTube. You know, people watch on their smart TVs, they watch on their gaming systems, they watch on their phones, they watch on their desktops. And, you know, as long as the other stuff stays the same, history of Dan Larson, you know, whatever else, all those other sort of identifiers and things that are associated with the channel, people are still, we do still get comments like, when did you change the name? I didn't even notice. Maybe I haven't seen your videos. It's like, okay, well, we're still here. You're still subscribed. Just go back and watch.
Well, I mean, I think I just proved that by not remembering that it was Toy Galaxy TV. Because subscribe to a channel, it's just there. So you don't need to worry about it anymore. You don't think about it at all. So it's just you get the videos in your algorithm and in your subscription folder. So it's,
I think people are also a little smarter about how YouTube works now, especially for channels that have been around for a really long time. 4 or 5 years to do the same thing over and over and over again. It's like that gets exhausting as a creator. It gets exhausting as a viewer. You know, I subscribe and unsubscribe from channels all the time because it's like, all right, I just watched this person for 5 years and they're still making the same videos and I just don't want to watch these same videos anymore. You know, you need to keep it fresh to keep it fresh for the audience. You need to keep changing what you're doing and mixing things up or you'll stagnate and the audience will see that stagnation and respond accordingly. They'll just, you know, stop watching and then forget about you. So Secret Galaxy for us was a way to sort of say, okay, this is official. We have changed the spirit and the character of the channel is still the same, but our content is obviously different. And if you're only interested in us because you wanted to see me talk about toys, that's not what we're doing anymore.
Makes sense. You know, when we were talking about different videos and different stuff before, I forgot to ask, was there ever or maybe many times where you were researching something and a fact hit you that you were just blown away by? Because I mean, as a fan of your videos, that happens every handful of videos. I'd be like, oh shit, I never knew that. But as somebody with the knowledge that you have in all of this, I imagine that doesn't happen quite as often. So was there a couple like, wow, I never realized this until you started going into it moments? Or
there's nothing, you know, really big, like any sort of earth shattering thing that sticks out right now. And that's only because our production schedule is so tight, you know, a new video every single Thursday at 5 o'clock, new 15 minute video, everything's got to be researched and written and shot and edited every Thursday. It's such a grind. It's such a tight schedule that as soon as Greg says cut, my brain is already clearing the cache. Like it's already deleting information because I got to start working on the next video. You know, and it's like, now I got to go learn everything about this new topic, get immersed in the media of that new thing, in the culture of that new thing, the community of that new thing, so that I can formulate an opinion and start to tell this new narrative. So it's like the sort of big things about the history of the stuff, you know, the 80s, the Reagan administration, you know, deregulation, all this other stuff. That sort of stays consistent in my brain. And then the rest of the pieces, I just sort of need to fill in. The most shocking thing, I think, was one of those things that sort of came gradually, is I never realized how many things that Frank Welker was in. He's just a voice actor. And if you'd asked me 10 years ago, who's Frank Welker? I would have said, he did the voice of Megatron. Mm-hmm. And that would have been the end of it. And now I would say he was in every single cartoon from 1975 through yesterday. If there was a dog in it or a weird alien or something, Frank Welker was in it. Like, it's a running joke on our channel. Like, you know, Peter, Optimus Prime, Cullen, Frank Megatron, Welker, they were in everything for like a solid decade. And then Frank Welker, even more so. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Optimus Prime, didn't he do the voice of Carr in Knight Rider?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
I remember totally. That as a kid. I remember going, wait,
this car sounds familiar. Yeah.
It's not totally. A little on the nose.
Right. Totally.
Oh, man. Well, I appreciate your time so much. I know how busy a schedule you have. And I kind of wanted to give people a window into your world, because I've been a fan of your videos for a while. Other than, of course, the YouTube channel, what's the best place that people should follow you? Obviously, you have a Patreon, but which I'll leave links to all of this stuff. But is there a favorite social media that you usually post on or something?
I'm on Instagram pretty much every day. I don't post every day. I post, when I feel like posting, obviously. I'm constantly, I hate it, but I'm constantly on Twitter. I'm trying to move over to Blue Sky. I have an account. It's like enough of the people that I follow and want to follow aren't there yet. So it's like, I have to keep going back over to Twitter. So I would say primarily Instagram, Patreon for, you know, we have a lot of behind the scenes and bonus content on our Patreon. And then just YouTube.
When you say bonus content, what kind of stuff is that? Cause I both want to hype that for you, but also
I mute
all of my Patreon subscriptions because my inbox is already filled up every day. So I, especially where I'm at, where I promote other people's channels, I don't ever want to see a video pop up and go, oh, this is awesome. Write an article and hit send to find out that was supposed to be Patreon only content or something else.
Right.
So I mute all of my notifications. So I never see any of your stuff other than what actually comes into YouTube.
At a minimum, if you're a Patreon supporter, we publish our videos on YouTube. They go live Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern time. If you're a Patreon supporter, you can watch them starting Monday, usually Monday at 5, so 4 days earlier, and with no ads. Like, we don't put the sponsored spots on those. So if you're like, God, I hate your sponsorships, I hate sitting through them, it's like, okay, just give us $2 a month and you never have to sit through another ad again. There's no YouTube ads, there's no other ads, you can just watch the video. That's at a minimum. We do that. We do a monthly podcast called the Galaxy Digest, which is Greg and I talking about the four videos we just made, the four videos we're about to make. We take questions, Q&A from our patrons. Greg will usually put up a post that says like, hey, you know, we're about to record the next Galaxy Digest. If you have any questions, feel free to throw those out. And then just talk in general about like state of the channel, what we're doing, what we're working on, where things are going. This summer we shot our Halloween special over the course of like 6 months. And so there were a lot of updates about like where we were at with that, what we just did. We try to post behind the scenes, photos and things for stuff like that, you know, other projects we're working on. And tease those things. I had a pretty busy con schedule this summer, so I'm just getting back into another Patreon exclusive show called Secret Lounge. I'm like, it's the Galaxy Digest and the Secret Lounge. And that's usually just like this, just like we're doing right now. That's me one-on-one, no chat. It's pre-recorded. For about an hour talking to someone that I want to talk to, you know, like sometimes it's somebody you've heard of, sometimes it's a friend of mine, you know, but it's just somebody that I feel like talking to have a conversation about whatever. I try to have some angle like, oh, we're talking about, you know, this person's history in the movies, or they make action figures or whatever, they're a reviewer, you know, try to tie it to that, but sometimes it's not tied to that. And then Greg will sometimes publish things like, his favorite videos. You know, he's, like I said, a big YouTube watcher. And so he'll post the things that are like, oh, this 12-year-old video that I first discovered in like 2000, you know, whatever, 12 years ago, 2011. You know, he'll post that with a little bit of commentary. I've been posting old artwork from my illustration days, from my comics days, and all that kinds of stuff. So we're always trying to find things to throw out there, to put on there, to give people their $2 a month worth, you know. And then we're actually going to be doing an overhaul of that pretty soon. And I know you weren't looking for this much information, but I'll
no, I was. I absolutely was.
We also have a $25 tier where we do blind boxes. And that's figures that I'm getting rid of, DVDs that Greg is getting rid of, comps, you know, samples, that product samples that companies have sent to us. We've had a long running sponsorship with 80s Tees. So sometimes I'll only wear a shirt once. I wear it in the video, I wash it, and then we throw it in a box, you know. So hopefully people who get those are size large, because that's what size the shirts are.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just,
that guys can't do that. You can do that. I do that once and I got a deodorant stain under my arm. No one's going to want my shirt. So yeah, you get
only
away with
worn
that.
Once. Yeah, like, you know, that's it. But we're always just trying to give people more value for their dollars than they paid for. And then that they're expecting. So we try to, and we always feel like we're not doing enough. So hopefully if you kick in your $2 on our Patreon, you're going to be overwhelmed with more than you thought you were going to get.
You know, I have kind of a strong opinion on this, and I might be in the minority here, but when I support somebody on Patreon, it's just because I want them to keep doing what they're doing. So while all this other stuff sounds awesome, and I feel like I'm missing out by not actually looking at your Patreon account, that's never why I clicked on that. It's just because, hey,
and you're not alone.
People make good videos. I don't care about anything else. Yep. I just want you to keep doing this. I don't want you to stop. So if you make 40 videos in the next year and I only really like 5 of them, that's fine. That's why I support.
So. You're not alone in that. We have a lot of very kind, very generous, very supportive patrons who are the same way. I have never seen them click like on a post. I have never seen them comment on a post. They have never mentioned the posts. They are just supporting it because they want to support it. And I think that's, you know, where Patreon originally came from and sort of grew out of. And for your listeners who may not be aware, and this goes to supporting your Patreon and anybody's Patreon who's out there, Even at $1 a month, that is like, I think 100 times more value than you get from that person just watching your video each week.
Yeah.
One view is worth like a tenth of a cent. It's worth almost nothing. So yeah. If you can give a Patreon account a dollar, you are giving them so much more money and so much more value from you being one individual person. It makes such a difference on the other end.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Well, Dan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'll obviously have links to everything that we talked about in here. And, you know, I'm sure I'll see you at the expos again, and hopefully we can follow up. And if you ever need anything retro game related or modern TV related, let me know. I'll hook you up.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks.